I never realized as a communicator how much I really enjoyed having a little bit more stage to work with. We'll do our best to stick here. Audrey, is great to have you as a musician up front. I've always been impressed by artists and musicians that that have such a quiet voice, and when they get up on stage, just that inner voice that comes out, and the songs and the lyrics, just so amazing. And what a cool badass guitar. I was commenting on that when I walked in. I'm like, I love that. I want to learn to play guitar just so I can strap that on and look like I know what I'm doing and carry that around. It's awesome. For those of you who have been following along, our cardboard race boat is under construction and doing well. I can attest from the last few days that we have spent in Mike Westra's incredible studio that, man, we have our best minds at work. And to apply this much energy and engineering skill to cardboard is amazing to watch. Our first night, we had kind of our plans, and we had Mike Westra and then Wayne and several of our people this morning are at Bliss Fest, so I hope they're having a wonderful time out there. But Wayne and Mike were talking about various things, and Wayne's like, well, I've got a specialty tool to be able to cut these large sheets, and so they had that all set up, and then Mike's got every type of tool you could need. We had to size the boat up, and so that meant applying a little bit of math, which I'm not good at, and so I was able to do the calculations to size up 1.25, but then that left me with a lot of decimal to fraction conversions that were in the 16ths of an inch, so I couldn't be expected to remember that. And of course, Mike Westra said, oh, here, and he has a sheet with all of the decimal to fraction conversions. So, like, we have a dream team of engineers behind this cardboard vessel. It's gonna be extraordinary. I hope you all watch us when we get out there. We're in this psychedelic summer series, which has been a lot of fun. And what I love is that we're taking these concepts that are very important within psychedelic therapy, psychedelic experiences, and this is coming not just from academic knowledge, but from personal use and experience on my part. We're taking these concepts, but we're talking about them because they apply to us whether you ever participate in a psychedelic experience or not. Last week, we talked about set and setting, and the definition that we gave, we have a poster in the back if you want to kind of see those working definitions, and then we also, I sent that out in our weekly email in a PDF form. So if you don't get our weekly email, make sure you go to our website, and there's a little link from the drop-down menu to sign up for that. But the working definitions that we're working with, set is short for mindset, and it means your inner landscape, the inner weather. It's your beliefs, your mood, your mindset, and your expectations, everything that you're bringing into an experience. And your setting is the exterior stage on which those things take place. So we're going to be talking about today a couple more terms that we touched on a little bit last week, but we're going to talk about them in a little more detail today. And again, I think these are so applicable for us, regardless, like I said, whether or not you're coming at this from a psychedelic perspective or not. And I was especially thinking this week about how do these things matter for us as a spiritual community, even for those of us in this community who would be non-theistic or non-religious or wouldn't hold any of these spiritual things that some of you may hold in common. You may say, I'm not entirely sure there is a God. I'm a relatively pragmatic person. So when you're thinking of ritual and ceremony and ceremonial things that you do, we typically think about them in the context of a spiritual or religious setting, right? But we perform all forms of rituals, and all of us have participated in ceremonies, graduations and weddings and funerals, that don't necessarily have to be spiritual in nature. They can be experiential. So we're going to try to take these concepts and boil them down, distill them down to their essence so that we can say, okay, regardless of where you're coming at these questions from, they can still be applicable to you. And the important reminder here is that the space shapes the story. When we're talking about set and setting, the space, the container that you're in, shapes the experience that you have. So ritual and ceremony, we're talking about this as the meaning that we make together. What meaning do we bring to the actions that we are performing? So the working definition that we sent out in the email, and we're going to review that this week here, the working definition is ritual is any meaningful action done with intention that often marks a shift in awareness or presence. Any meaningful action done with intention, mindful attention, that signals or marks some kind of a shift in awareness or practice. We talked in pre-talk this morning that rituals are different from routines or habits by virtue of the attention that we bring to the practice. A ritual is any meaningful action done with intention, but a routine or a habit is the things that we tend to do, we call it on autopilot. You know, what's called when we're on the road and we're supposed to be going towards Spring Lake and we're driving and just by accident, we're driving along and next thing you know, crap, we're over the bridge and we have to go all and do the turnaround and come back around, right? It's called a habit. It's a routine because your brain starts to work on autopilot. There are things that we do that we call muscle memory, right? We've done it enough that our bodies and our brain remembers that and almost kind of programs it into a different part of our brain that works on these non-meaningful actions, these things that we do without thinking that we're doing it. Now, here's the trick, though. A ritual, which is a meaningful action done with intention that can signal transformation, a ritual, if done enough or done with a lack of attention awareness, can very easily become routine. It can very easily become a habit. If anybody has grown up in any kind of a church that has had rituals or ceremonies, which we'll talk about in a little bit, you know that at one point maybe those things held meaning for you, but probably if you've done them enough, you got to a point where you performed them on autopilot and they started to lose their meaning. We've all experienced those things that you do it enough that it doesn't really break down. So rituals can be elaborate or simple. It can be as simple as lighting a candle, playing a song. It can be conscious breathing or breath work. It can be movements or motion, speech or song. What makes it a ritual is the meaning that we bring to it or the attention that we bring to this experience. It sends a signal to our mind and our body that we are preparing for some form of a transformational or a liminal experience. Rituals are things that are brought to mark transitions in life or meaningful experiences. The quote that's in your bulletin is from Starhawk, who writes about a lot of this from indigenous ceremonial perspectives. She's crafted a lot and written a lot about ritual and ceremony. She says this. She says, ritual affirms the common patterns, the values, the shared joys, risks, sorrows, and changes that bind a community together. We talked about this a lot in pre-talk. What is the place of ritual and ceremony specifically for a community like ours? A spiritual community made up of people who even can't agree on what the word spiritual means to them. But we all know that we've experienced lots of other things outside in the world, and we're not necessarily saying they're good or bad, but we've come to this place and we've said, this feels like about the right amount of ritual and ceremony that I feel comfortable with. It doesn't involve forcing you to make declarations of beliefs that you don't find to be personally true. It doesn't require you to engage in experiences that run counter to your beliefs. We try to bring the intention to these gatherings that recognizes that we're a mixed group of individuals, but we have some shared values. So Starhawk says, ritual affirms these common patterns, the values and the shared joys, risks and sorrows and changes that bind a community together. Ritual links together our ancestors and our descendants, those who went before us and those who will come after us. And especially if the ritual that you are performing is an inherited ritual, one that has not been created by you or the people around you, but maybe was handed down, the more it's been handed down and the longer it has existed, chances are the weirder it may be from the outside looking in. Like, we grew up in a Western context, and many of us have at least been in a church that has performed or held a communion. How many of you have been in a building, in a ceremony or ritual where the act of communion, not necessarily Catholic or Protestant, but bread, which is kind of loosely, a lot of churches now go, you know, these little styrofoam wafer things that are terrible, right? But they keep and they're easy for the people who have to prepare it. The bread and then the wine or the grape juice, right? How many of you have been in a room where that has happened, okay? You didn't necessarily participate, but you, yeah. We're aware of that, but when you start kind of like poking at it and getting below the surface, like there's some really weird stuff that goes on there, especially if you're a Catholic. You may have heard the word transubstantiation, which is a fun religious word to say. Transubstantiation holds that in the act of performing the communion and the rituals that are held by the priests, that the bread turns into the literal, and they use that literal body and blood of Christ, right? So these things that are older have an oddness to them. Not necessarily, when I say weird and odd and strange, that's not necessarily bad. It's just that it represents something that has some depth to it. We also talked about the ceremony of a Passover Seder. And if you've had the chance to participate in that, especially if that wasn't your religious faith of origin that you grew up with, it's quite fascinating to hear the stories and connect the stories with the very tangible things that you're doing. It's no longer just a bitter herb, but that bitter herb represents a part of the story. The salt water represents the tears that are shed. And it's a very tangible way of experiencing a very, very old story. So rituals mark these transitions. They can oftentimes be older and handed down. And this is where we get into some of the woo-woo stuff. And I've really tried, especially in these last week's talk and this one and the next one that we're going to do, that is kind of like this little bookended definitions panel, if you will. I'm really trying to distill this down to recognize and to, you know, at least explain it with as little woo-woo as possible. But it's hard when you're talking about things that are inherently strange and different. Example, we did during our Sacred Earth series an earth altar over here. Some of you remember that. Each week we had different pieces or things that you brought to participate in. Some of you liked that more than others. Some people said, I'm not very comfortable with the word altar. That feels very churchy and religious. I said, you could call it a table. It doesn't matter. But it's a little bit strange. Like, I'm going and I'm bringing a leaf or a nut or a twig or a stone. What is that? And I think it was during that time that I talked about how, as a spiritual community, we have aspects of a church part of us, you know, from the church, shared church experience that most of us bring into this. And we have this strong communal element that marks our shared values, and then just a weird sprinkle of some little weird cult shit that we do every so now and often to kind of like keep us on our toes. And my friend Ty back there commemorated that for me in a shirt that I'm going to wear to the picnic next week, so you can appreciate that. That it talks about the three elements. Now, these are not things that we talk about to the community, right? So this is inside language. I like talking about this kind of stuff on a mid-July Sunday because it's already like sparsely attended. Half of you decided to like sleep in this morning, and you woke up and you're like, "Do I really want to hear about ritual and ceremony? No, I'm going to sleep in a little bit longer. It's so lovely." But this little weird sprinkle of some cult shit that feels strange to us, kind of, there are a lot of things that we do that when you really kind of step back and look at it from the outside in can be like, well, that's strange. Why do we do that? What marks this particular ritual? And what we would say is that a ritual is anything that we're doing that has meaning or intention behind it. That's the key part there, that it's the meaning that we make together that defines our community. Each gathering that we have is only as meaningful, as impactful, as what all of us bring together. Your individual mindset that you bring into a morning, the setting of how the morning feels, how comfortable is the room, how nice is it outside? Like this morning, we don't have the black backdrop curtains, and I feel like I have a nice angelic ethereal glow, right? So, you know, what is the room like? You know, what has the morning been like for you? You know, how much arguing and throwing of utensils was had in the car on the ride here? All of those things shape our individual, but they contribute to a shared experience that a community has together. And some of it can feel weird, some of the things that we do, but it's exploring what is the personal meaning and attention that we bring to it together. Even at C3, we have rituals. We have things that we do and have done for a while. Pre-talk and talk back is a great example of that. That's not necessarily something that's done in a lot of church or spiritual communities, but it is something that was done somewhere along the line. Someone came up with this idea and they said, we're going to call it pre-talk and talk back, and here's how it's going to function. It's something we do every single week. And we have meaning and intention behind that. And if you don't think that we subscribe to rituals here, what would happen if one Sunday we ended the gathering and you walk back there and Patty and her team had not provided any small bites for us? And you're standing over, I could picture the whole group of us just kind of milling around the area, even though there's nothing on the table, and we're like, you know, doing that out of like, what's missing here? There's things that we do and things that we bring of various scales of importance. It's, you know, that not all things are equally meaningful. We talked about that in pre-talk as well. That some things have small amounts of meaning and other things have a deeper connection. And a lot of that has to do with how deeply connected we are to the story behind that thing, right? Those of you in this room who were a part of creating the framework for the small bites and the pre-talk and the talk back, you have some very deep connections to those practices that maybe somebody else that knew coming in from the outside wouldn't. You're gonna perceive it and experience it different. So let's go a little bit deeper now and talk about ceremony. Rituals, any meaningful action that's done with intention and often signals a transition or signals to ourselves that we're going to experience something. A ceremony is a consciously designed experience that weaves together ritual or oftentimes many rituals, intention, and presence. And oftentimes ceremonies, they don't have to be marked by a communal element, but more often than not, A ceremony is more than one person. You can perform a ceremony, which is a set of rituals done with intention, but what makes the ceremony impactful oftentimes is the communal element, the shared experience together. So that's, again, where the set and the setting really come into this conversation. What inner weather are you bringing to this experience? And what is your outer landscape? Who are the people you're with or not with? What is the music that you're listening to? So I'm going to highlight a few things that shape ceremonies and shape rituals and shape the setting of an experience. These apply for all of us in our day-to-day lives, in our community, in our practices. It especially applies in psychedelic settings and in psychedelic experiences. And I would dare say that if you have consumed a psychedelic substance, LSD or mushrooms or ayahuasca, the degree of how impactful it was to you or how harmful it was to you had probably a great deal to do with whether or not you ritualized the experience and created a ceremony around it to signal to yourself that you were doing it with intention to bring about transformation. It also can make concerts more colorful and fun and interesting, but that's not the real transformation. The swirling patterns in your carpet taking on shapes and moving is fascinating to our mind to observe under those settings. But what signals whether that's going to be a transformational experience? A couple weeks ago, Michael talked about how many people who have experienced, the vast majority of people who have experienced psychedelic therapy or transformational experiences in this positive set and setting, like curated experiences with a trip sitter or a guide, follow-up and intention and therapy and all those things. The vast majority of people who experience that in that setting rank that experience as one of the most impactful experiences of their lifetime, right up there with the birth or death of a child or spouse or something of that nature. So how is it that a substance like a mushroom that grows out of the ground can trigger that kind of an experience for some people and can also, to a 17-year-old at a festival, create a scarring experience? Well, it has to do with how much attention and intention we bring to that experience. And that same thing is true for us as a spiritual community. What are we bringing to the experience? Because what we bring oftentimes will determine what we're getting out of it. The more intention, the more meaningful connections we make between the thing that we are doing and the things that we value that are important to us, can turn even something mundane and ordinary into a transformational experience. Drinking a cup of coffee in a mindful way can be ritualized to the point where it can connect an action that people do on a daily basis to something much, much deeper. A cacao ceremony, I just participated with Ruth a month or so ago, is another great example of that. Oftentimes, things that are handed down from generation to generation and have a deep cultural connection are fascinating to experience, especially as an outsider, because we're learning the stories that make those actions meaningful. So ceremony adds intentionality, it adds structure, and often a communal component. Indigenous wisdom emphasizes the strong importance of the role of shamans and guides and communal leaders. So it was pointed out in pre-talk that rituals and ceremonies can be and are often connected to positions of power or authority. So there is the potential for abuse and misuse, which is why we have terms in psychology like ritualized abuse and ritual abuse, because some people have been deeply wounded by rituals and ceremonies that are concocted and run by people from a place of power. There's a rising, growing conversation in psychedelic communities. As I read a lot of the newsletters and reports and journals from this, there's a lot of attention being spent right now with the rise of local shamans and guides, people who help usher people into psychedelic experiences, which by and large have very positive effects. But occasionally there are reports of people who use it to prey upon people because you're in a very vulnerable state. And so psychedelic abuse and people who are under the effects of those substances, it is so, so important to know and trust the guide, the shaman, the person who is leading that experience. Several of you asked, you know, you hear about these retreats in Costa Rica and Peru and other places. And I have very mixed feelings about that. On the one hand, it's frustrating to me that we have to travel to another country to feel like we can engage with these substances in a ceremonial container. And it also is frustrating because it's so cost prohibitive, and you're placing so much trust in a person or a guide or somebody that you just meet. So there's a lot of real risks and concerns to that. But indigenous wisdom talks about the importance of shamans, of guides. And that's something that, to be honest, we've lost and we never really had in a good way in our Western colonial context. Most of us, our experience of people leading ceremonies and rituals are pastors and priests and rabbis within the Judeo-Christian context. And you don't have to be that in touch with the news to recognize that there's quite a few of those people who use their positions of power as an abuse and abuse those positions and take even sacred experiences and muddy them with profane actions. So the meaning that we bring is so important. And as a community, the meaning that we make together matters. I said last week, and I said this in the newsletter, when it comes to set and setting, that setting piece being super important, this exterior part of our world. Because I said, our mindset, remember, is like the Michigan weather. It changes very quickly. You can walk in, have a bad morning. By the time you leave, after some coffee and conversations, you've walked out and the day has changed, right? That's how malleable your mindset is. Your setting is super important. And you and I are the setting for one another. To think about that when we conduct these ritualized experiences, when we come together and we sit in our chairs and we face a certain way, and we say things in a certain way and do things in a certain way, you and I are the ones that bring the setting to everyone else in the room. We can help change the weather just simply by the attention that we bring. I want to read this last quote here by Robin Wall Kimmerer. We've quoted her so much this year. This is from Braiding Sweetgrass. And this is kind of an important distinction when it comes to ceremony. And it's a rabbit trail I wish I could go down. There's a whole bunch of interesting conversation to be had. Maybe we can have it in a talkback afterwards. But Robin Wall Kimmerer says, many indigenous traditions still recognize the place of ceremony and often focus their celebrations on other species and events in the cycle of the seasons. In a colonist society, in a colonial society, the ceremonies that endure are not often about land, they're about family and culture, values that are transportable from the old country. So think about that. Like for us in a colonial context, most of the ceremonies that we participate in are ones that mark moments or dates or actions and things and are less connected to the land than many indigenous traditions. Many of the indigenous traditions that have these ceremonials, containers, these powwows, are deeply connected to the land because it matters so much to them. Ceremonies from the land, Robin goes on to say, had no doubt existed there, but it seemed that they didn't survive emigration in any substantial way. I think there is a wisdom in regenerating them here as a means to form bonds with the land. That's just an interesting idea that I'd like to leave in your brains to noodle on this week. What are the ways that we can bring meaningful actions that connect us deeper to the land? What are the ceremonies, the rituals that we do as a community together, and why do they matter? What rituals have turned into routines that we need to rethink? These are the questions that we're having, and I appreciate you having this conversation together. Let's welcome Audrey back up as she wraps our morning up there. And while she's coming up, everybody give a big hand for Chase, who hit it out of the park with his meditation chime today. You know, sometimes when you hear the meditation chime, you're like, did that just start? I think it's starting right now. Is now the moment of silence? And he must have had his Wheaties this morning because that was a solid meditation chime. I felt very embodied in that moment of silence. And thanks also to Rod for that wonderful thought. So let's carry these words in conversations and let's try to get them out of our head and into our bodies and live them out. And let's keep having these conversations because they matter. Thank you.